Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Dev Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! This show is brought to you by Avalara, who wants to help developers make sure their Woo projects are tax compliant and done right with Avalara's API. I'll tell you more about Avalara later in the show, but let's dive into today's Woo Dev Chat.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Woo Dev Chat. This is our last episode of the year. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, Marcel. How are you?
I am very good. Can you believe it? It's already December.
Yes, I can.
I think we have to explain why we are laughing so hard at this introduction. We just tried to record, right, like 10 minutes ago, and I was explaining why I felt a little bit ridiculous using this term. Can you believe it? It's already this month or that month, because it's something that people regularly do. And it's basically the last month where you can say that, right? Because January doesn't work. Can you believe it's already January? That's the only month that this expression is not valid. But I guess it's a good one for December, because sometimes the year passes so fast that you can't really believe it, right? Mike, how has been the year for you? What can you say about it?
It's been a weird year.
Weird.
Yeah. I'm satisfied with how it turned out. Lots of learning, lots of challenges overcome. Yeah. Lots of squash played. So that's a huge win.
That's good. Yeah. Oh, and you're asking, how about mine? Okay. I'll answer you. No problem. It's going to be an interesting episode today, people. It's our last episode of the year. So yeah, I think we're allowed to make it as loose as possible. Well, actually, it's been a very quite good year. And this time around, I didn't make any the resolutions list people make and what to expect for next year and all of that. I used to be a big believer on those things and write those down. And like the first month of February and March, fight for those items on that list. And then every single year, you realize, why are you fighting for those items? Some of them are ridiculous. Some of them are very easily achievable. You don't need to put them on a resolution list. You're going to get them either way. And so, taking all of that in consideration, I've completed maybe half of that list, but not because I really wanted it, just because it didn't actually happen. Do you have some sort of like resolution list for the year? Do you do that?
I make one throughout the year. So my goal for this year was to launch my new homepage. It was a very short list. I thought that would give me a greater chance of actually achieving, because normally I would take a long, I made a list of places I wanted to travel to. I did that as well. But professionally, it was launch the new homepage. And I gave myself 12 months to do it. And I think we're going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. There's very little time. We're expecting that you will launch it soon. Maybe by the time this episode goes live, you already have that up. Gonna make sure that we add to the show notes. People should check out your website, your new website.
What about you? What's on your list?
Oh, well, on my list, on the profession side, I mean, it was just mainly that this huge client that we're working on would work out, and it did, and it's working out very good. And the other thing that we had was, well, that I had personally, was to learn maybe different program languages and different ways of getting websites online. We are sort of like we are all very much WordPress experts, and there are so many other platforms and ways to spin up websites nowadays that I wanted to just learn a little bit outside of the WordPress environment, how to create pages, and talking about Django, Next.js, and other stuff like that. But also as well, learn a little bit more about Gutenberg and React and all of that. So those boxes are checked. All the other ones that are not checked are not worth mentioning, because I don't want to get depressed over this in this episode about not having them achieved. So I think we can move on. No, it's been a very good year. And I'm not going to be very putting that much high expectancies in next year. I think it's going to be a natural follow-up of this year. I just hope that we get less distracted with things that are not necessarily good for the community. And this is as far as I say about it. That's my hope.
Yeah. Well, my father always said the key to happiness in life is low expectations. So low expectations for next year sounds like He would agree with you, I'd say.
I will happily meet your father in December 2025, and we will both talk about if that worked or not. I'm pretty sure
how low your expectations are for life.
Right. Well, having that said, what wouldn't be a great episode if not having somebody that we both very much admire, and we call himself our friends. Today, we're thrilled to welcome Chase. And I was hoping that I could just try to say Chase's last name before we go to air, but I'm going to do that training right now. So bear with me if it's not the same pronunciation or correct pronunciation. And we will ask Bob not to edit this out because I really want to try this out and see if I can nail this the first time. So it's Chase Grzegorzewski.
So close. And to be honest, I'm not even sure I pronounce it correctly. So it's a Polish name. It's as far as I know, the pronunciation is Grzegorzewski.
Grzegorzewski. Okay.
But I was speaking with somebody, you know, who had immigrated here from the US, from Poland. And she was telling me that I was pronouncing it wrong. That no, it's not Grzegorzewski, it's Grzegorzewski. So she had a different, and it sounded like we were saying the same thing, but a different emphasis. So I'll caveat with your native Polish listeners might take issue with me saying it's pronounced Grzegorzewski, but that's how I pronounce it.
All right. Now that we know Chase's last name, I'm not going to repeat that. No, Grzegorzewski. Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of makes sense because the W makes a U. Okay. Never mind. I was going to say, Chase, welcome to the show. You're an expert WordPress developer and you're a top rated contractor at Codable. That's not debatable. You helped a lot of numerous businesses and individuals to optimize their websites, enhance digital presence, and you've been over a decade involved in web development. You're specialized in, I can say, custom plugin development, performance optimization, maybe also WooCommerce.
Yeah, that would all be fair. Yeah, really functionality of websites is where I kind of find my sweet spot. Rather than design, kind of, if your website doesn't do what you want it to do, that's where I come in.
I know that you worked with clients across the globe. You delivered high quality tailored solutions that made everyone's exception. It was just generally an awesome person to work with. Welcome to the show. Yeah, so we're going to just basically talk a little bit about dive a little bit into your journey and what is for you the WooCommerce journey and as a developer. And so basically, just for us to start this conversation, why don't you tell us how your journey started and how you first got in contact with WordPress and WooCommerce?
Sure. I kind of came to web development from a non-traditional standpoint. I had previously been working in manufacturing at a small company. Because it was a small company, it was one of those things where if you needed some sort of specialized software tool or something like that, you had to build it yourself. So I would do that from time to time. And then I found like, oh, I really enjoyed this more than my actual job. So I started looking into, okay, so if I wanted to do this for an actual job, if I wanted to get into, you know, working for myself in software development, how would I do that? Well, if you want to work in web development, working in WordPress is a no-brainer, just in terms of the market share, the amount of people that work with it, and the flexibility and the number of things that you can do with it. I tell my clients all the time, you know, we can do anything. It's a question of whether we should, whether or not it makes sense for you. And then with that, you know, if you want to win work, you got to work with small businesses, and WooCommerce and WordPress is kind of a no-brainer just in terms of the amount of people out there using WooCommerce, the amount of support that it's got, and the amount that it's maintained and developed and moved forward over the years. So that's how I came to be doing what I'm doing now. It's been 11 years since I quit my day job, I think. I might be counting that wrong. And before then, I was moonlighting, but I made the commitment a little while ago, and it's been just a wonderful journey. It's been so fun working with people from all over the world, learning their business, learning, you know, what they want to do, the difference they want to make, and helping them do that. So that's kind of how I came to.
And so I understand you started locally with businesses that are from around your area, but you eventually then ended up in Codable. And how did that come about? And basically, for people who don't know, Codable is an awesome platform to get expert help on WordPress and WooCommerce development, to hire experts that are the top 2% of the WordPress experts. And we are not sponsored by Codable, but Codable is a huge friend of ours, so I can say that. And how did that come together? So how did you find out about Codable and join?
So I'd been working with some other freelance marketplaces. And basically, you know, with other freelance marketplaces, it is very much a scramble, both to the bottom is in terms of who can lower your prices lower. I live in the Pacific Northwest, so my cost of living is not the lowest in the world, certainly. So that was very difficult to compete with, but I could find customers and I had been able to kind of cobble together a business that way, but it wasn't quite doing what I wanted it to. So after I got some experience, well, how can I kind of up my game? How can I work in a community? One, establish a sense of community, which Codable definitely has in terms of we do compete with each other for our businesses, but we also collaborate quite a bit. So we help each other and we really try and do what's right by the client. So I started looking around at, okay, once you're a well-established freelancer, what are some options to you? And since I've been predominantly working in WordPress, Codable just kind of, it was a Google search simply was got me. Then, you know, I started to go through the application process. I started to get a feel for the culture, the values, how they vetted experts, the things that they valued with client interaction, and found that it really kind of aligned with, you know, what I like to do with my clients in terms of, I'm not here to do pressure sales. I don't do pressure sales. I do, does this make sense sales? Are we a good fit sales? And that's really what the interaction was with Codable. And it's been home ever since. So it was really a nice journey to get there.
That's really cool. And so WordPress, WooCommerce, and we mentioned customize plugins, build custom development for clients. But at some point, you specialize yourself in WooCommerce, right? So was that from the beginning, or did WooCommerce come along because you had people who also had WooCommerce and you started getting interested in WooCommerce? How is it so that you today can say you're an expert in e-commerce, and how did it come to fruition?
It was really just kind of a matter of that's where the business pulled me, where the market pulled me. It wasn't from a strong, I've never set up a retail store for myself. I've never sold anything from home, but I started to have a lot of clients that this is what they're using. And because I am a self-taught developer, I think 99% of all web developers are self-taught developers. I fall into that vast majority.
I don't know what you're talking about. I went to WooCommerce Developers College.
College? Well, exactly.
One here in Porto, another one in Lisbon. I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. None of us have degrees in WooCommerce, but it's one of those things. It's open source. You read the code, you learn how it works, and it's a lot of lines of code to learn, but you learn it over time. And I found I really liked the way it was structured. I really liked the flexibility it afforded, the things it allowed me to do for my clients, and the ways I was able to create unique value propositions for them so that they could, you know, go out to the market and provide their services however they needed,
in an efficient way.
So I would say it was just kind of, you know, the business kind of pulled me in that direction. It wasn't any sort of grand plan or anything like that. But over time and several different customers and a variety of fun and creative projects, I kind of landed at a place where WooCommerce became squarely in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's great. And would you say that you now prefer to work with WooCommerce-related clients or projects, or is it just right now what you're doing that relates to WooCommerce? Did you like develop any special relationship to the platform itself, to the tools? Because I mean, there's other solutions to e-commerce on out there, right? And so my question is more, why specifically WooCommerce? Is it just because it's a WordPress plugin, or what is your criteria to be as a choice for e-commerce website?
It's really in terms of it checks a lot of boxes for me. It's open source, which means it's secure. And I have to explain that to a lot of people that in general, open source software is going to be much more secure than your proprietary software. And the simple reason for that is you've got more developers looking at it, right? We've got developers on Codable that will find a security bug on some other open source piece of software, and it's patched within 3 hours of somebody discovering it. You contrast that with proprietary software, and it's only the in-house team that can really find the security bug, not the entire world. So WooCommerce is very secure, and that's important for a lot of clients, you know, especially when they're staking their livelihood on their ability to keep their business and their customers secure. It's very flexible, and not everybody needs that flexibility. You know, some people, I'll just name, you know, one chief competitor, Shopify. And I've got nothing against Shopify, but Shopify is certainly not as flexible as WooCommerce. So if you've got a value proposition that requires you to sell things in a different way or present products in a different way to customers, you're not going to have the same options in terms of both plugins or what a developer can do for you. Not to say I haven't met some phenomenal Shopify customers out or Shopify developers out there, but it's a very specific niche. And it's, I have a product and I sell that product for a fixed price. It doesn't fit everybody's business model. And I found I can fit WooCommerce's abilities to pretty much any business model out there, which is key, especially with what I like to do, which is I like to find those weird problems. I like to find those problems that, you know, two or three developers before me or have quit on or given up on. I'm kind of a glutton for pain that way. So it's the right tool for the type of work that I like to do, which is solve unique problems for clients that are looking to do something special for their customers.
Mm-hmm. It's nice when you know you can find a solution, right? I get some clients who are considering moving to Shopify and because they're frustrated with some aspect of the WooCommerce maintenance, you know, things break with plugin updates or whatever. And I'd usually warn them, like, if you switch to something like Shopify, you're probably just going to have new frustrations. There'll be different kind of frustrations and you won't have the same freedom and flexibility to fix those frustrations as if you, compared to if you stayed with something that you can change however you want, right? With Shopify, you're very much like boxed in a restricted way, right? So that's something I think it's important to bear in mind when people want to switch. There's no perfect e-commerce solution, or that's what we would all be working with.
Right, exactly. Do you want a walled garden or do you want a wide open field? Both have their drawbacks, but some people need that walled garden and some people need that wide open field.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned about open source, and I think one of the main aspects of it is if the code is out there, the source code is out there and it has a bug, there are multiple malintentioned people with the will to cause damage on huge websites that are going to explore that open source code and try to break it. And the more people we have doing that, the more likely it is to be fixed and patched right away. And so not only we ourselves can take a look at the source code and see potential risks, but also all these other hackers that are out there trying to infiltrate into the systems will let us know sooner rather than later about all those security issues, right? And we're going to all benefit from all those attempts. Obviously, we hope that it's not with one of our clients, but it's certainly an advantage. And to another point, if you are in working with a client that has a vulnerability and people have breached in, because it's open source, you can patch it almost immediately, right? So if there's something that you need to do, you can immediately even edit the source code of WooCommerce itself or WordPress if needed, just for the sake of protecting the client, right? And with other platforms out there, I don't think you can do that, right? I don't think you can change source code of Shopify to protect something that your code is not responsible to do and stuff like that. So obviously, it's hard to explain to a client that, but once they figure out, okay, so I'm in total control. Oh, I don't want to be in total control. Here, let me give this to other people. And if they find somebody like you to help them out through all these challenges of figuring things out and doing the right thing and configuring and setting up and protecting all of them realize sooner rather than later that this is a very stable and very good solution for their e-commerce website for sure.
Yeah. And not to get too philosophical, but it's really amazing because, you know, study after study has shown open source is more secure. And it's kind of a positive reflection on humanity, right? We say, everybody, you can see this. You can try and find good things to do with it, or you can try and do bad things with it. And enough people are trying to do good things that we overwhelm the people that are trying to do bad things. It's kind of cool.
Who would say that transparency is the way to go? Or like, right? I would say that if you're open about intentions and what you do and what's included and all of that, yeah. I wanted to talk about advancedwoo.com. And you can take that clip later for the audio because this was my best impersonation, my best voice, radio voice that I can do. It's basically a list of topics that are currently offered by you to aspiring and current WooCommerce developers. Do you want to talk us a little bit more about this advanced WooCommerce development website that you have on?
Sure. So it's definitely a pet project of mine. I am the client of it, or the general internet is the client of it. It's entirely something that just kind of came about as an idea that I wanted to create something different. And it's not that the documentation for WooCommerce isn't great, because it is great. And it's not that there aren't other tutorials out there, because there are a ton of tutorials out there. What I found was that there was kind of a gap between the, do you want to read all the source code and all the documentation and really, you know, read the entire text, or do you want the beginner information, you know, how to set the configurations, how to enter your basic information in the WP admin area to configure it. There wasn't really something for developers that was set up in a way that I felt was productive. And by that, I mean, a lot of the educational techniques out there are long form videos. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm looking for information and I see, even if it's a 6-minute video, that's about as short as you can put together any sort of good information. And 6 minutes is too long. I've got a very specific question and I've got a very, very specific information that I wanted. So I wanted it to be searchable. I wanted it to be self-directed. I wanted it to be something where people could get to the answer they wanted and they could go as deep or as shallow as they wanted into any given topic and still have link outs to the basically the source material, the resources that kind of put together all the information. So with all those criteria, I kind of ended up with, in some weird places, I ended up thinking like, oh, you know what's actually really good at that? PowerPoint that you can click through. Who thought that PowerPoint would be good for anything? It's not built on PowerPoint. It's built on Slide.js, but it's basically PowerPoint. There's a reason it's used for billions of presentations all over the world. It's good for something. It's just often misused. And then I wanted to structure it in a way where it was really geared towards adult learning. I think a lot of the educational material out there is very directive and instructional. And I wanted this to be self-directed and self-paced and something people could explore as they needed. So it's really just something I wanted to do. I was able to carve out enough time to do the topics that are on there right now. I've got plans for more topics as I'm able to carve out time and make improvements on the topics that are out there. But that's kind of what got me to this.
Mm-hmm. And so for everyone listening, we're talking about courses or short courses about specific topics, automated testing, WC data, REST API, webhooks, WC session, WC cart, WC checkout. And so what do you expect from this is you propose people to go through a course that talk about these different subjects and allow people to test throughout the course as they follow the course. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's got knowledge checks through it. It's set up so that you can either just interact with it as a visitor, and you don't have to sign up. You can be a complete guest and interact with all of the content that's on the course. The only benefit to signing up for it is you can kind of track your progress if that's something that you want to do. Sign up is completely free. There's no charge on it, but it's a series of courses to basically find the information that whatever developer needs for specific projects. Because we're all intellectually curious, but we're most intellectually curious when we've got a job to do. So it's there to give people the tools they need to solve whatever specific problem they've got within that topic and gear towards that.
Mm-hmm.
I get most intellectually curious when I'm trying to avoid doing certain kinds of work as well. procrastination, right? You're like, oh, now I really need to learn how to do this other thing that I've been putting off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say my automated testing course is great for that. If you want to avoid doing something, that can be a great way. Not that automated testing is not work. It's a tremendous amount of work, but that can be kind of a fun, that's like developer candy to me, because you're writing code that tests other code. And that to me is very fun.
Just
to
is that a thing? You write code to test other code?
It's true. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Who has time for that?
You know, that's a measure of how good a client can be. If a client will pay me to do regression testing and I can tell them, look, this money is not going to build any functionality for you, but it'll make your code base more stable, and they sign off on it, that is a great client. That's one you hold on to because they get it. They understand that as a developer, there's technical debt you need to address, and that's pretty special.
I was just joking because I honestly, I'll take that course for one. And second is, I believe it is so important to write those tests because it's the only way for you to be sure that it's going to work and not wait until somebody crashes it for you. So it's as simple as that.
Avalara wants to make sure that your projects go smooth. And part of that includes doing it right with their API. Their resources cover it all to help your clients manage sales and use, excise, GST, VAT, and other tax types across the U.S. and abroad. Want to learn more? Just go to developer.avalara.com.
So Chase, how do you prepare for writing these tutorials? Like, how do you choose the topic? How do you design the course so it's easy for us to digest and follow and understand and actually execute?
That was a big part of kind of this journey and this process was I knew that since it is a passion project, since it is a pet project, I knew I needed a repeatable process to basically come up with this content to generate it. There's still a substantial amount of work, but at least I've got kind of defined steps to work through. The least structured of the step is selecting a topic. It's basically the way I select a topic is somebody plants a seed in my brain and I decide we want to do it. It could be through seeing other developers talk about it, through seeing it come up as a new feature in WooCommerce, see it's a problem that a lot of people are having projects for where they've got a lot of questions for. Just kind of, oh, hey, that would be a good topic with enough meat to it to basically put together a course. I don't think it's going to be a full course, but the next topic that I'm really focused on is I'm overdue on putting together something for the high performance order storage within WooCommerce. That's really what I want to do next because there's a lot of great information out there, but I kind of want an easy to digest tutorial on it. It's well past time for me to add that to my site because it's been in core for a long time, WooCommerce core for a long time. And it's showing what the future of the WooCommerce code base is going to look like because there's some really interesting structural changes to that. But then I go through, some people have probably heard of the 5-why process. It's a problem solving mechanism where you think about a problem and you ask, well, why do I have that problem? And then you answer that question. And then you ask, well, why is that true? And you ask that 5 times. And the idea being that the true answer, the root cause to your problem is not going to be more than 5 whys away from the original problem that you have. So I asked that about kind of the topic that I want to get to, and it can get kind of childish. Like I have written down because I said so. But then if I ask the next question, if I continue with the process, usually after the childish answer, there's a good answer after that too. But because this is for developers, we don't just care about why, we also care about how. So I take that and I repeat it with what I call, just a 5-how process. And so how does this work? Well, okay, how does that work? How does that? 5 times. And I write all that down. It's literally just me with a notepad scribbling down. And then I look back through my notes and I underline things that I think would be interesting to talk about or interesting for instructional material. And then I look at what are the uses of this topic based off of kind of the 5 whys and the topics that have come out from that. And then I take the principles of use and then where are the knowledge gaps within the community or within the documentation. And that's kind of where the course material comes up. And then I break it down into fundamentals, which are my more esoteric, this is what the code is doing topics. And then practicals in terms of, well, if you, here's a pet project or a toy problem that we can solve using these principles of use. And I was actually kind of surprised because so many tutorials and so much information out there is practicals based, it's some sort of use case based. I thought those would see a lot more traffic, but to be honest, it's the fundamentals that developers are looking at. It's what they're more interested in because too often the pet project is different from what the problem they're trying to solve, right? The toy project is too easy or it's been done, more interested in the fundamentals. But I'm still doing both because I do see some people like a little bit of each and it kind of helps me structure things.
Have you found that, I remember when I was making more tutorials, I would be super excited and passionate about making one because it was really complicated and I was really proud of myself for overcoming the challenge and making the documentation work. So it was like a step-by-step, you know, copy and paste to build something. And then I published it and it was, you know, thousands of words long and I was super excited. And no one really cared.
It has been really fascinating because I'm not doing extensive market research on these. I mean, it's such a niche topic, right? Like, it's just for people developing in the code base in WooCommerce. It's such a niche topic. I'm not doing extensive market research. So it's very much interesting to see what people actually care about. I enjoy creating the topic regardless. And kind of one of my measures of success is, do I refer back to my own material when I can't remember how something works? And I do, and I find it useful. But at the same time, sometimes I find I'm the only one referring back to that material. So very low traffic. It's that sense of frustrating, yet at the same time, I'm glad I did it. So I know exactly what you're talking about, Mike. It can be an interesting journey to find out where you end up at.
Yeah, it's funny because you think, oh, I really wanted this tutorial when I started and people will really value this because it took me, you know, sometimes those tutorials took me days and days of frustration and Stack Overflowing and God knows what. And I'm like, oh, I'm finally going to free the world from this same kind of frustration that I was experiencing.
Yeah, it is because you're unique, Mike. Nobody else has the exact same problem that you have or wants the exact same solution, I guess. It's something I've experienced as well. I'll put it that way.
So with that, what is the tutorial you're most proud of and why?
You know, the WC Data one, that is the first one I ever did. So I'm proud of that because for a couple of reasons. One, because it kind of established this process that I've been able to use to create the other topics. And it was something that wasn't really covered. It's very techy. It's something that a WooCommerce user, a store owner that's not a developer, really doesn't need to know. It's very much how the engine runs sort of thing. But it's still a very popular topic in terms of people are still interested in that material. They're still engaging in that material. It's not the most popular topic. The session, cart, and checkout topic has since supplanted it, but it still sees a lot of traffic. And it's the one I've had a lot of people kind of reach out to me about and say, hey, this was good. This helped me. This really showed me how everything connects together in the back end. So I guess I'm proudest of my oldest child, but I love them all the same.
I'm sure that's what all parents say. They don't have any favorites, but you know.
I don't have any favorites, but the oldest is really doing well. So I'm pretty happy with that one.
What the challenge that I think you find about making those tutorials, for me at least, when I also had a awesome idea like Mike had, I'm going to solve all the problems of people working for the same information that I'm working. I always found that if you should take more than 10 minutes to find something, it's because people didn't explain it well or there's very little information. And I had also the experience to put it online and nobody saw it. I did that not with tutorials, but with repos, with GitHub repos, where I did put up some of the smaller plugins or solutions or tools or tricks or whatever that helped me. But the question that I have is, the most challenging part, if you agree with this, is maintaining it. Like, you do it once, it works for a couple of weeks, then somebody comes in to say, hey, I tried this and it didn't work. Then you start asking some questions. Yeah, because I'm using version 3.0 and I did only test with 2.9. And then 3.0 is just so different from 2.9. And then he'll have to go there and update everything else. This ties up with consistency and being thorough with something that you started and you updated. But it's even more demanding if you were talking about tutorials and all of that, right? Would you agree with this?
Absolutely. So if you do a code inspection on some of my courses, you probably actually see at the bottom, I've got a comment code that I keep track of. Whenever I review it, I tag the last WooCommerce version that I reviewed it at.
Okay.
And it's not there for people to look at. It's just there for my own tracking to remember how long has it been since I've updated. I've been fairly fortunate in that WordPress and WooCommerce place such a premium on backwards compatibility that most of the changes are minor enough that it doesn't break the tutorial. The biggest inaccuracy or gap that I have right now, today, as we talk. Is
it Gutenberg?
No, I've got Gutenberg covered on the site, actually.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
and it is one of those topics that nobody is interested in. And I'll talk about why I think that is in a little bit. But the topic I've got the biggest problem with is actually the high-performance order storage. I've actually got there about how, like, hey, we know that WooCommerce is not very effective at storing orders.
By the way, how do you pronounce the abbreviation of it? Is it?
I say HPOS.
Oh, yes. Another one for the group. Okay, hold on. Continue. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Somebody saying HPOS?
We had an episode where we discussed for too much longer of a time how to pronounce it, HPOS or HPOS or...
I would say HPOS, which is longer, so not very efficient. So we landed on HPOS, which seems to be the prevailing one.
Yeah, and if you can stay away from the POS acronym in the English language in any time, it's good because it generally draws other connotations, right? So I think it's HPOS. I think the high performance order storage is great. I think it's staying away from the POS is accurate. But yeah, Marcel, I think it is hard to come back to, especially when it's a pet project like this, right? It's just kind of one of those things in terms of I do it when it's in my free time. I've actually had developers reach out to me and say, you should charge money for this. And I said, if I do that, then I've got to
compromise.
I've got to maintain it extensively. I'm okay with having an error or two right now. Right now, the error or two tends to be just the line number of where the code is, right? Because some code might have been changed in the file, but the code is still there because of that premium and backwards compatibility. But yeah, keeping it up to date is always a challenge.
And that gets more complicated when you have multiple components, right? Like your automated testing has other softwares that are not WooCommerce. And then if they get updated, then the way they talk to each other might change and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I mean, for that one, I had to build my own ecosystem. And I actually used Docker just so that I could have some control over, okay, here's the environment that it works in. We know it works in this environment. You can download this environment and here's how it works. So that one, if you're interested in Docker, the automated testing will give you a little primer on it. I try not to go too deep into the weeds because it's not the main topic. But yeah, once you've got external things, keeping everything tied together is near impossible. But I do find some shortcuts.
And it's difficult when you're you don't have an employer or someone who's paying you to support this, right? It's purely out of your goodwill and a desire to help the community learn and stuff, which it would be nice if, like, I tried opening donations when I had a tutorial site and nobody donated. I had thousands of visitors every month and nobody donated. It really hurt my heart a little bit. You know, I was like, oh, guys, I'm trying to, you know, help make the Linux world an easier place to navigate. And, you know, everything was like copy paste friendly with lots of explanatory text. And the nature, I think, is with when stuff is free like that, we kind of just expect it to keep being good and free. But now I don't maintain that site anymore. It's been 5 years or so since I posted on it.
And it's really good at exercising your empathy muscles for the people that are maintaining this open source, like NPM packages, or people that maintain PHP even, or all these things that we just come to rely on. You know, there's that old meme of entire modern architecture, and it shows just this little wedge that everything's balanced on, and it's a software package maintained for free by somebody out of Utah for the past 15 years. It's made me happy to see that a lot of the package managers like Packagist or Composer and NPM are starting to say, like, hey, would you like to donate to these packages that you're using for free? Because the maintainer needs to eat food.
And power their computer, food, and all of those things to like create.
Would you like to help them? No? Okay. I thought maybe you would because you're using it for money.
Yeah. It's an interesting sort of situation for sure. And, you know, they even bring it down to like, just donate a cup of coffee, like just give a dollar and you're like, eh.
Right.
I think it's usually too many clicks. You know, if it was like, you know, you
I was going to say that
phone, wave your phone in front of the computer, be like, hey, give them a cup of coffee. It's, right. It's like you click, then you have to go. And then you're over at another website and you're like, oh, how does this work? And do I need a receipt for my accountant and all of that? It's be much easier if you could just give the dollar through the internet by, you know, touch or something.
It's the oldest e-commerce problem that every solution, every platform has that offers a slightly different approach to it with slightly less clicks. but for some reason, most of them are two clicks too much for us to interact and operate with, right? And it, you actually gave a very good idea. Like, what if we make a software that you shake your phone in front of the screen and that means $1? It's a good idea. I'll save that.
We could do it. It'd be a QR code that comes up in the command line. You just take a picture of it and you've Venmo or whatever money transfer thing.
See, you're now already going into a specific platform. Not everybody has Venmo and all of that.
Right.
It needs, so that's the oldest problem. Whoever cracks that, right? Whoever gets a system, operating system agnostic or country agnostic system where every single payment works regardless, then you have cracked the code, I guess.
No, no clicks, just wave the phone. I think that's the solution. We don't want to click anymore.
I mean, we're almost there, right? Elon Musk has this other company, one of 500 that he has, where we're going to have chips inside our brains and we're going to command everything with our thoughts. So we're getting there. I was going to say the thing that I think is most interesting about your project is that we as developers look for a lot of for documentation and we look for specific functions and specific hooks and whatnot that do specific stuff. And we always end up in Google and finding out about all those same lame websites. Oh, you have five solutions for this. Either you install this plugin or you do this or you do that or you hire a developer. And for us experts, we don't have outside of Stackflow and those kind, we don't have like a documentation where we go in and I'm not even talking about AI and asking some AI stuff about a solution, like where we can browse, like you have the different topics and we can dig into advanced application or advanced explanations about all the different challenges advanced people who work with WooCommerce have when they develop solutions, right? We have a lot of beginner stuff out there, but there's very little advanced stuff out there. And that's what I found really fascinating about your project. And you could turn it into a more searchable kind of solution where you present maybe a search engine and you have all of the different functions you work on or descriptions you have or something that makes it more discoverable. Because I think that's still in very high demand out there. And the reason why we keep saying we don't get our tutorials seen by people is because all of the other trash that is in front of us in Google search that just, I was going to say protect us from being, but it's not even protection. It's like they're covering us up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing, I think that's interesting. It would be nice to put maybe like a chatbot on top of it or something like that. With it being built in Slide.js, it is searchable, but it's only searchable per topic. So you got to be in the correct, unfortunately, you got to know, there's a key combination, control, shift, find. Yeah, I would like to make it a little bit more searchable. It is browsable, which is nice. But I know a lot of people, talking about that 6-minute YouTube video being too long, the 10 slide deck similarly is probably too long for the person that's got that one problem that's preventing them from delivering to the client. So yeah, we're working on searching. That's a priority for me that I definitely want to address in the near future. It's there, but it's not as intuitive as I'd like it to be.
Do you find your... So I understand you find... So what you did is mainly for advanced and for experts. Do you find it is also easy for people that use WooCommerce? So we were talking about your clients, that they have enough resources out there. Because one of the other things that I see people do is once they deliver this bigger project and they have given the keys to the Ferrari to the client, they need a manual, right? They need something that they know about how to operate it. And this is something that is recurring in all of our projects. When we deliver something, it's basically all the same thing. And again, I don't know any website where we can go and say to the client, hey, here's a website. I've picked up the topics that you should know about how WooCommerce works and what we did with your website. And this is what you need to learn. There's only like either very generic stuff out there or stuff that it's not for this particular client. Do you think ever getting yourself busy with developing something for the client side of it?
It's one of those things because so many of the clients are looking for that unique value proposition. They're looking for a really unique solution from developers. It's something that really the developer owes the client as part of the delivery. Now, some of that can be done with, building in something from the WordPress ecosystem. But I think if anyone were to build something that's for everybody, you'd end up with something that's fairly generic again. I think when you've built not just a Ferrari, but a custom built Ferrari with custom components, because it's going to be driven on a very specific road, to continue your analogy, or a very specific course, you really have to be the one that gives them the instructions on what design decisions were made and what their touch points are, where they can interact and affect the way the website works. And I guess my recommendation to developers would put yourself in the client's shoes, right? I'll go back to that 5-minute video being too long. Can you make, instead of 1 5-minute video, can you make 2 2-minute videos? Can you make 5 1-minute videos? Can you make no video and make something that's easy for them to search and review and solve their specific problem when they need to solve something on their website? Or can you put it right in the website where, you know, I'm not saying those pop-ups to say, oh, hey, Marcel, it's your first time here visiting the website. Did you know over here this button does this? Because I think most people are impatient as I am and just say, leave me alone. I want to play with it. And then those pop-ups never come up, right? Like, oh, first time you didn't want it. Okay, never mind. So I think it's one of those things, you know, the first one, just more bite-sized documentation. That's something that we can easily build into our projects. The second one of making intuitive UI UX, one, that's hard and it's very individualized, right? What one person thinks is intuitive might not be intuitive for another. It's the reason we've got competing operating systems. It's also something that even if you talk with the customer and find out what they want, that's going to take time. And are they willing to pay for it? And if the answer is yes, great, have fun. But it's more likely than not so to say, can you just give me a user manual? And then you have to make sure that user manual is really good and it can solve their problems quickly without them having to go to minute 12 of a long video.
Right. Yeah, totally. Mike, how do you communicate to your clients how they need to operate their new Ferrari? When do you deliver them?
I love documentation and explaining things and going on and on about the different use cases and how they can tweak it and everything. Some clients really don't care, is what I've learned. They're like, when I want to change this, I will come back to you and want you to do it for me. So then we come back to the, oh, I built this big, beautiful thing. And they don't care, even though it's very much in their self-interest to care.
Right.
So it really depends. Like I generally prefer when a client already has a developer they use for their stuff or a development team, because they usually will be way more excited about learning about how to use their new toy from a technical perspective. So it really depends. Like I generally prefer when a client already has a developer they use for their stuff or a development team, because they usually will be way more excited about learning about how to use their new toy from a technical perspective. The owners tend to care more about how much more money is it going to make them, or productivity and making employer likely, or making them seem more technically sophisticated, or whatever it might be. So it varies a lot. What about you? I know you like to teach as well.
So yeah, I mean, sometimes there was one project that we did embed in the WooCommerce backend some areas where we did write some indications on how to work that, especially for custom post types when we had some of the functionality worked out or embedded in the edit screens of that particular post type. We gave some instructions on screen on how to fill out the forms or how to use the metadata. So we did embed some of that information. The plugin was responsible for injecting different meta boxes on the actual screens with information and help throughout the whole plugin. But my general experience is that they probably hire us back to make changes or to operate and stuff like that. But at the same time, that is the kind of work that is supposed to be done by the client. And we don't want to, like, sort of, if it's a simple update on the back end, you should learn it how to do it, right? So it's kind of difficult. I like documentation, not probably as thorough as you are. The furthest I've done is to build meta boxes and embed all the documentation within the WooCommerce itself. So that's the way that I go about it.
It's so fascinating to learn that about a client, though, isn't it? Like, in terms of some clients definitely want to know, like, okay, I want to be able to change buttons from green to blue. and show me where and how I can do that when I want to change buttons from green to blue. And then other clients will be, I want to pay you to change buttons from green to blue when that happens. And it changes a project so much in terms of, like, as a developer, I can move code way faster than I can mess around with the back end. So finding that out about a client can be huge in terms of, like, oh, you just want to pay me to every time you want to add a drop cap or something like that. Okay, that changes the way I'm going to build this thing, because it's going to be a lot cheaper and faster if I just code it. But if you want to do a drop cap every time, then I need to give you a button for drop caps, for example.
And the time that it takes explaining the client how to do that, if they had the tools already available, it's a lot. It's hard to charge for that time as well. So if they're willing to pay you to do something, yeah, it's a very tricky situation. I always add some margin for training because I think it's essential, and for building documentation. If they don't do anything with it, it's obviously their problem, but it's also part of the delivery, right? So when you're doing your job and you're doing this huge custom implementation for yourself, you want to also maintain some documentation so you know where things are and what functionality it has. And especially if you want to go back, do you remember that other client we did 2 years ago where we did this very particular change on the cart layout? How was that? Where is the code? And if there's no documentation, it's even harder for you to search even on your computer, right? And if you have written about it and if it leaves somewhere in some file or even like in a cloud service somewhere, it's a lot simpler for you to go and search for it and just, I remember now, right? Because searching for code is very, if you don't know what the code is, you don't know what to search for, right? So it's very interesting. Chase, it has been absolutely awesome to have you on this episode. We want to thank you so much for coming into today's episode. It's our last for this year. But before we go, I'm going to ask you the same thing that I asked Mike when we started this episode. And actually, two questions. How was your year so far? So far? We're at the end of the year. And what are your expectations for next year?
It's been a year of change. I've had one client that just kind of, big client, worked really well with them. It was time for them to graduate from WordPress to their own custom built platform that they had made. Their business had been successful enough that they could do that. And it was one of those things, it was like sending your kid off to college. I was sad to see them go, but I was happy to see them get this solution that really was driven exactly towards what they wanted. 2024 for me has been the year of working AI both into my clients' workflows as well as my own workflows. And it's been, you know, it kind of came about in 2023, but I feel like it really kind of took off this year in terms of, if you're not using it, you're way behind the power curve at this point. And that's a huge rabbit hole in a podcast all unto itself. But it's been an interesting year. It's been a reorientation for me in terms of where I'm going to focus my business. I think I'm going to be able to work on advancedwoocommerce.com a little bit more, but it's been a good year in general. The business has been running along great, and I'm happy. You guys were talking about New Year's resolutions. I've cruelly to myself been keeping diligent track, about 75% of the way there, and I am very much trying to sprint to the finish, just goal-oriented wise, in terms of trying to see what I can get done.
It's really awesome.
But it's been a great year.
Awesome. Cool. All right. I think this is it, Mike. This is our last episode of the year. Have anything special to say to our listeners?
We hope to see you again next year.
Oh, right. That's another way to say it. We hope to see you next year with great health and lots of energy and renewed hopes and all of that, right?
Please don't let this be one of my published tutorials that nobody cares about.
That could be one of the items for next year's resolution list, like make at least one successful tutorial or like seen by more than 10 people. That would be a huge success. It's 9 more people than the previous one. Well, thank you everyone for listening in. Thank you, Chase, once again for being part of this last episode. Happy New Year, everybody. And I hope to see everybody next year then. Bye-bye.